I don't know, folks. Maybe I was out of line yesterday to insist that there were some unwise, weak, ignoble, and stupid people in my audience. I apologize for that if I spoke ill of you. And it's often funny. I'm being facetious because I know who you are and you know who you are and I know who I am. I find it funny, sometimes actually tragic, that Paul calls us this in 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, around verse 15, he says, consider your calling, brethren. He's asking the Corinthians to look at themselves. Consider yourselves. There are obviously not many wise among you, not many noble. I would have been personally insulted had I been a member of the Corinthian ecclesia. At least the potential would have been there. Oh, gee, Paul, thanks. Look at yourselves, people. Obviously, God doesn't call very many smart people. Okay. And if this is the case, and it is, oh, and speaking about doing everything right, I maybe belabor this point over the years, but I feel like belaboring it again. It's so striking to me that people like the Amish, are these people in strict religious sects, they're kind of like the elder brother in the prodigal son parable, and that they do, quote, everything right. And yet, if you notice, God is not giving these people revelation. These people have no revelation. They don't know what God's doing. And the reason is because they don't have that depth of experience. They don't have even the depth of failure, the depth of sin, because they were raised doing everything right. They continue to do everything right. They look down their noses at people who do everything wrong. They have no empathy for the sinner. They have no appreciation of their own salvation. Well, of course, God saves me because I'm a worthy person. I do everything right. I'm Amish. I know it's Amish, but I like to say Amish. This is the perfectly illustrated in the parable of the prodigal son. So it puzzles me then. When someone is unwise, weak, ignoble, and stupid, they get blamed for it. For instance, I've done unwise, ignoble, and stupid things. People say, Martin, how dare you do unwise, ignoble, and stupid things? And yet, these same people will laud God. It's amazing, wonderful display of God's grace, how he chooses the unwise, the weak, the ignoble, and the stupid. And in the same breath, Martin's underwater, you so unwise, weak, ignoble, and stupid. So, I guess you can't win. But you can win. And here's how you win. You ignore these people. Now, the animals. I don't know if you realize that God made a pact with the animal creation as well as man after the flood of Noah. Oh, but first, I'm getting ahead of myself because I want to talk to you. There was one element of the cherubim, just to review, to help remind you, since I got off track yesterday, where we are in the unveiling of Jesus Christ. We're ready to see the seventh sealed scroll unrolled by the lambkin, the only one worthy to do it. And before this happens, we gather together representatives of the celestial realms and the earthly realms. The 24 elders represent the celestial realms, and the four animals at the throne of God represent the human creation on earth, including man. Man is included. There are seven distinct orders of animal life on the earth. That's right, seven. That's an important number to God. But God does not make a pact with all of them, only some of them. I'm going to explain to you what I mean by that. But when you read of the cherubs, the cherubim in the Old Testament, these are identical to the animals of Revelation. Now, in the Holy of Holies, there was the tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant. If you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, and some that's for some people, that's the only contact they have with the Ark of the Covenant, good enough. Even with the Ark of the Covenant, even with that movie, you can see the cherubim, two cherubs with wings overlooking the propitiatory. Now, I'm quoting now from Exodus 25, verse 17-20. I do this to show you how protective the cherubim are of God. I love this because, look, God doesn't need defended. He can defend himself, right? But he chooses to choose defenders. And in the tabernacle system, he chose cherubim to protect, to overshadow the Shekinah glory. And he put cherubim in the way of the tree of life to guard it, to protect it. God himself could have done it, but it pleases him to make beings to do it for him. I'm going to briefly extrapolate here and talk about the evangel today is that God doesn't need defended. And I've often been accused, maybe you have too, why are you defending God? You know, you're getting all upset, going after the error. God can defend himself. Of course he can, but he chooses to choose defenders. And so he raises people up, just as he raised the cherubim to protect his ways, to defend, to kill, to maim, to destroy in his name, and for his name, and for his honor, and to enact his will. Thus also, in the spiritual realm on earth here, he has appointed defenders. So if that's your job, inhabit the role with gusto. Don't kill, maim, and destroy. That's the job of the cherubim. Our job is to herald in peace. Exodus 25, verses 17 through 20, you shall make a mercy seat. I'm reading out of the NASB here. I don't know why. Concordance says propitiatory. It means pitch, the same substance that covered the ark, the pitch, the tar. It's a covering. You shall make it of pure gold, 2.5 cubits long and 1.5 cubits wide. You shall make 2 cherubim of gold. I made the point the other day that, I think last week, that the cherubim were made of the same substance as the mercy seat, the propitiatory. And we're seeing this in Revelation, that they're actually described as being part of the throne. So they're, in that sense, one with the throne. They're made of the same material, gold. Make them of hammered work at the two ends of the mercy seat. Make one cherub at one end and one cherub at the other end. And if you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark with Harrison Ford, you can see this when they show the Ark of the Covenant. There's one cherub on this side, one cherub on that side. The cherubim shall have their wings spread upward, covering the mercy seat with their wings and facing one another. So the cherub are not looking out on either side. They're facing one another, and the faces of the cherubim are to be turned toward the mercy seat. So we're going to see this in the unveiling. They're very protective of the mercy seat. They're very protective of the throne. God appointed them to do that, and they're protective of his honor and glory, and they kill people and break things in during the tribulation to prepare the earth. So in the days of Noah, God made a pact. We know this. He brought the beautiful rainbow. And the rainbow was a promise that he would no longer again flood the earth. Now, I didn't realize this before, but he made a pact not only with Noah, but with the animal creation. Listen to this. This is Genesis 9, verses 8 through 17. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you. Here's the verse that I really wasn't aware of, verse 10, and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth. Now, this is the revelation. These animals that are being made a covenant with are now represented by the animals, the cherubim at the throne of God. Look who he's making it with, the birds, the livestock, the wild animals, and with humanity. 4 divisions God is making a pact with after the flood: birds, livestock, wild animals, and man. And we find, corresponding to this, that the faces of the cherubim that John sees, one has the face of a vulture, one has the face of a bull, one has the face of a lion, and one of a man. These correspond. The wild animals, the lion, the domestic animals, the calf or the cow, whatever it is, a bull. You get the general point. I forget the specifics. I'll go there. Don't worry. 4 faces. I mean, it's not like I can miss it. It's written down. I'm just escaping me for the moment. Which many of you have told you that it's helpful. You've told me that it's helpful for you when I can't remember specific things like, what was that, a bull or a calf? What was one of the faces? This comforts you, because some of you think I'm some spiritual genius and that I have the Bible memorized, and you're intimidated by my great wisdom. You're intimidated by my knowledge. And so when I screw up, you're like, Sender screwed up, so now I could screw up. Yeah. And I myself find comfort when the writer of Hebrews says, quote, as it says in another place, the writer of Hebrews, Paul, is quoting another passage and he can't remember it. And he says, as it says in another place, that's always comforted me because, you know, nobody has the whole Bible memorized. Nobody says everything perfectly. So if you can find comfort today in the fact that I can't remember, is it a bull or a cow or a calf? Then more power to you. When I'm weak, then I'm powerful. So watch out, I'm even more powerful now. So he's making a pact with these creatures, and God is holding true to his promises, and each of these creatures has representation in heaven. Now, I don't want you to think that these creatures are in heaven, but creatures on earth have representation in heaven. Kind of like the colonists in early America, before we were a country, one of their major beefs, speaking of cattle, with King George was that they were being taxed without a representation in England. They had no voice in the government of the mothership there, mothership being England. So that was unfair. And in our country today, of course, each state has representation in the state, in the nation's capital. So likewise, there is fair representation in heaven of the animal kingdom. Man has a representative and the animals do. But interestingly enough, some animals do not have representation. Now, to set us up for the rest of this week, I'm going to give you the seven main divisions of the animal kingdom. There are the fowl. Those are the birds. There's the cattle. That is the domestic, I think it was an ox, the face of an ox. The cows are the domestic life on earth. And I would make this include puppies and kitties because they're domesticated animals. And there were the beasts of the earth, that is the wild animals, the ones you don't bring in your home, porcupines, three-toed sloths, tigers, polar bears, black bears. The Tyrannosaurus Rex does not make a good house pet. I would hate to see the hard, crunchy cereal that this beast would require. And then mankind is the fourth division of soul life upon the earth. Then we have the great whales, that is the sea mammals. Whales are mammals. They're not fish. Then we have every living soul that moves on the waters, Genesis 1:21. Those would be your fish, starfish, jellyfish, shrimp, crabs, anything that's not a sea mammal. I suppose that would also include trout. Does that include trout? Okay, it's been confirmed for me that trout are included. What about snapper? Okay, snapper and trout are included in, quote, every living soul that moves in the waters. And then the last division is creeping things of the earth. I have a lot to say about the creeping things. This would include ants. It would include scorpions, spiders, snakes, serpents, and this is because the serpent is the head of all creeping things, and God had no deal with them. You remember that Seinfeld episode where George was driving and he inadvertently drove over the pigeons in New York City, and his girlfriend got really mad at him. But George said, they're supposed to move. Why didn't they move? We had a deal with the pigeons. They're supposed to move. Well, God has a deal with all the animals, but not with the creeping things or the sea life. And this is going to help us understand God's ways with humanity. It's going to help us understand how merciful and gracious he is. It's going to help us understand how important all life is to him. We're going to see something of the heart of God. And again, we're getting a more detailed view behind the scenes in the throne of these beings that are so close to God and that are being unveiled to us in the unveiling of Jesus Christ. And we're also going to see, the most important thing to me, is that God is always true, always honors every promise he makes.